You're listening to the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. Conversations about community media. Visit decentered.co.uk or follow on Instagram and Twitter at Decentered Media. Good afternoon, Rob Watson here for Decentered Media, and I just wanted to adjust my microphone a little bit. Run through an update of some of the things I've been up to and writing about on Decentered Media, which is decentered.co.uk and Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads at Decentered Media. It's been a I don't know whether I'm coming down with a cold or something like that, but it's got to the point, that time of year, where the clocks change and you kind of realise you're actually exhausted from having worked since Christmas and not really kind of been relaxing properly. And I'm just waiting for the warmer weather where I can kind of get out and enjoy the garden and being out and about rather than always thinking that I've got to put about three or four of the layers on. But you know, spring is here and it was bright yesterday, and you know, small mercies. And today is Easter Sunday, so it's an excuse to have some chocolate, which doesn't really need much of an excuse for me. Anyway, earlier in the week I attended the DCMS symposium on the future of community radio, and some feedback about the event. It was kind of billed, when we kind of managed to get information out of DCMS about what was actually happening and what the itinerary was for the event. It wasn't really a participative opportunity to have conversations about topics that are broadly relevant to community radio and the future of community radio. Is, if you like, it was more of a sit and listen hear what other people were saying, with not really any involvement from anybody in the audience. So I'd got up at 4:30 to leave the house at 5:15 so I could get the bus at 6 a.m. Because it was only £20 on the bus and it would have been £200 to go by train from Leicester. So and that was a factor, I think, that put off a number of people from attending, because it was on a work day and it was in central London. So is it in Whitehall, and the effort of and the cost of public transport to get into central London is quite substantial. But anyway, it kind of really wasn't in the format of what I expected as a symposium, that kind of expert presentation of papers which summarise and raise issues about strategic questions and strategic analysis. Instead, it was more a case of kind of a conversations between kind of people who were exploring ideas and sharing some experience, which is fine, but I wouldn't have expected it in this kind of situation. And then there was a lot of things like, hey, how do you set up a charity? Hey, how do you do fundraising? And they're better suited to one of the events that the Community Media Association or the UK Community Radio Network do about information provision. So I was kind of at the end rather dissatisfied with having gone all that way and spent all that time to be told things, and some of which were platitudes, and not really have any opportunity to get in and deconstruct. And kind of thought about this in the way that, you know, it needs a community radio. And the concern I have is that we've kind of created an echo chamber. And what we're not able to do is take something apart and put it back together again. And that's an essential activity for thinking about how we improve things and how we develop things. And I'm reasonably good at that. It's something that maybe some other people don't appreciate, that is a skill, that it takes an art to being able to do that analytical deconstruction of something and then look at it again and then figure out how to put, you know, what are the bits that you actually need and what are the bits that you don't need and how can this be, you know, remodeled in order to fit the purposes of the future rather than looking back at the past. And there were things like, you know, kind of terminology about it tended to focus towards thinking about local radio as opposed to community radio, and the distinction needs to be ironed out and needs to be clear. In the legislation, it does talk about community radio serves communities, both of, calls it community of interest, which is not a satisfactory term, because things like communities of identity are maybe more solid. But it also talks about serving local audiences. So it's open to interpretation about how a group would want to come along and provide a service, which is either for a group of people, which is defined as a geographical identification, or a group who have a social, cultural, ethnic, religious identification that they would want to provide a service for, which doesn't necessarily respond well to the local idea. So, you know, this kind of terminology is really important, because I think it shapes people's expectations of what you're there to discuss and what you can think through. And it was interesting that the event organizer Trevor Dan and Nathan Spackman from Bro Radio in Cardiff both said that they dropped the phrase community radio and referred to themselves as a local radio station. And it's like, well, it kind of didn't give me much confidence that the event was being organised by people who don't really embrace the notion of a community radio ethos and all that implies. And so the conversation and discussion I found was very one-sided. And, you know, I've got plenty of opportunity to offer my opinions and my views. I write my blogs about these things and I put my podcasts out and I don't ask people to agree with me. But it's nice to have the conversation and the engagement that kind of looks at things and says how and what do we need to be doing in the future. So I'm really concerned that there's a kind of an echo chamber and that there's a confirmation bias that gets fed into Ofcom and DCMS, the Department for Culture, Media and Sport. And that what we see is that this gets recycled into the policymaking process. So one thing, for example, was mentioned at the symposium was that Ofcom are going to undertake a review on how community radio stations' key commitments are accounted for. So the key commitments are those things that the radio station defines when it applies for the license, that it will have a certain character of service that meets the needs of its audience or its community that it serves. So the type of music, the number of hours it does, you know, the kind of balance between speech and music in the programming. And there's been some consternation over recent years that stations get tripped up by this because it might vary between week to week. And so somebody can have a complaint made against them because they've done 9 hours of speech content that week, whereas they are licensed to do 10. And technically, yes, they're in breach of their conditions, but Ofcom, you know, kind of has to hold them to that. And the two arguments for this really is that, you know, we can water down and dilute the key commitments and the reporting about the key commitments, as has happened with the social gain reporting, which I think it was 2015 when the obligation to provide a full social gain report to Ofcom was dropped, and this isn't published anymore. So we don't really know what social gain the community radio stations are actually, other than that which they present to us themselves. And that's very much a patchwork, with some of telling us excellent things about their social gain and others are largely silent about it. So the key commitments is that kind of, you know, it seems a good idea to make it as simple and holistically defined as possible. But in doing that, what you do is you lose the focus and the emphasis on those core things that community radio does, which are different from independent local radio, commercial radio, which are more generic and can be serviced in other ways. And so some of the key things that community radio stations are obliged to do is to offer training, offer participation, offer access to not just the programming itself, to people coming along and doing a program and a show, but for people to actually get involved in the management and to shape the way a station is organized. And this leads to a problem, and there are serious problems. And one of the things that's happened over the last few weeks and months is we've heard that the Hermitage FM in Colville is going to be closed down because, unfortunately, John and Jan Sketchley, who run those stations, and this has been published in the local Colville News, are no longer able or willing to carry on with the station. And it's kind of, reading between the lines, it kind of comes across that there's a decision been made by the founders of the station. And that's all there is. There's nobody outside that can come in. The volunteers who volunteered for the station haven't been trained up to learn how to run and manage the station. And one of the criteria I would suggest for community radio is that sustainability element, is that the people who are involved learn how to run and organise and manage a station. And so that no one person, and we've seen this a number of times where one person is overly responsible for everything, and if something happens to them, then the station is really in a pickle, and it can't, often get it to find its way out of that because everything was tightly controlled by that one person. And you've got to have a distributed internal management structure and governance structure that ensures that any station is, any person within the station is replaceable, so that you're not dependent on one person. Now, how does this get structured into the things like the key commitment and the social gain reporting for community radio stations? It's really important that we have these conversations, and we have these conversations in a way that is open to deliberation and discussion. And again, I wonder if the kind of echo chamber that we've created where, there isn't a challenge. So, challenge comes in different ways. And there are people who are perhaps more diplomatic than I am and have more influence over the shape of public policy. But you know what? I've kind of reached the point in my life where I haven't got time anymore to be waiting and to be polite to people and stand in the queue and wait my turn. It's like I'm 57 years old this year, and how much longer do I have as a working lifespan to have any kind of impact and influence? And, it's like I want to see things done quickly. And so the more we dilly-dally and skate around these things and gloss over things and pretend that everything's wonderful, it's delusional in my view. And I'd rather have the kind of the hard conversation at every stage of this to, ask those questions. What if, what happens if we do this, and what happens if we do something different? And we've got to be, kind of having those conversations, because I think it's too important and things don't stay the same. So one of the things that's happened of late, of course, is, things don't stay the same. The media bill is about to embed and legitimise the commercial operators, basically, as far as I'm concerned. It's my personal opinion about this. They're operating a protection racket, because it's going to be very difficult for any new suppliers to get in, start a new service, get hold of any licenses, get onto any new platforms. The existing incumbents are going to be, they've been given everything gifted to them in a box with a bow tied around it. And the competition element is going to be lacking, and it's very difficult for any small scale independent operators to to get started and to access licenses, whether it's DAB or whether it's analog AM and FM, because Ofcom aren't giving out any AM or FM licenses, either community or independent licenses at the moment. So that means that it's very, you know, there is no ability to challenge the incumbents. They largely dominate the DAB platforms because they've occupied them and they've filled them up with lots of stations and these, you know, kind of what we call regurgitation stations. So there's legitimate questions to ask about the level of competition. At the same time, the BBC has reduced its local radio output in England, and it cut the specifically local place-based services for Leicester, Derby, Liverpool, you know, wherever. They've cut those to, they no longer carry on after 2 p.m. in the afternoon. They go to a regionalised service. And typically in BBC efficiency style, you know, local radio stations are now are having to employ additional freelance staff to get content made up and ready, because these new digital group services that they've got on a regional basis, the East Midlands, the West Midlands, they're not providing content quick enough for radio to turn it over. So they're having to double up, which is like, you know, defeats the whole point of the cost savings that was put forward. And we heard from Chris Burns and we heard from Matt Painton from Chris Burns is from runs BBC Local Radio in England. Matt Painton is from the Radio Centre. And we heard from both of them as kind of a kind of soft soap conversation with them. And it didn't really ask any tough questions. And I think, you know, somebody like Roger Bolton, who does the excellent Beeb Watch podcast, would have taken more of a kind of probing tone with both, because, you know, they're in a position of significant privilege in terms of how they, and you know, how they're structured and the security that they've got. And the independent community radio sector is very fragile and very fragmented and doesn't have the kind of clout. And lots of people will say, well, this is a great opportunity for community radio. Well, it would be if we were having the strategic conversations about partnerships with government. So my point of view is what is the incentive for, you know, the independent and community radio sector to actually invest in these areas and for people to commit themselves to producing local radio content, local media content, in a way which is supported by volunteers as part of the civic society and social process, rather than a national bureaucratic management style process or a commercial consolidated commercial process. So there's got to be something there which incentivizes those people who are hardworking and want to see and develop something which is locally relevant and meaningful as a media service. And goodness knows we need it. So the cart was before the horse from my point of view about the symposium, because it meant that the people we didn't have in the room were notable by their absence. We didn't have anybody from the Department for Levelling Up Communities and Housing. We didn't have anybody from Education and Skills. We didn't have anybody from Business Development. We didn't have anybody from Healthcare. We didn't have anybody from Regional Government. We didn't have anybody from local government. There were these huge number of people who should have been in the room, and other civic society organisations. I'm thinking like organisations like I've subscribed to quite a lot of newsletters that I get from different organisations, which, you know, locality, belong. My God, you know, the list is endless. I should publish a list of it, but there's lots of civic society organizations out there who are campaigning for better civic engagement and public engagement. And community media, for me, in its broad sense, and also within what's defined in legislation in terms of community radio, so in terms of broadcasting, has a public purpose. It's a fragmented public purpose because we determine that for ourselves. But we need to be focusing on, how in our local, communities and our towns and cities and places, are we dealing with climate change, climate crisis? How are we dealing with cultural or a lack of cultural democracy? How, what we've seen in Birmingham, the effects of the cuts that they've introduced into Birmingham City Council about the closure of museums and art galleries and cultural activities. The first to go in a time of difficulty. And, you know, what does our media say about this? Well, you know, you can see that our the conglomerate style media providers, they're not really that interested in that, you know, day-to-day discussion of what makes life worth living within one of our towns, cities, neighborhoods, communities, whatever, you know. And they're not really interested in exploring the flavor of each place by itself. And so that need for local is really important. And it becomes a bit of a cliche to talk about it. And that need for community engagement and identity is really important. Liam McCarthy, the former editor of BBC Radio Leicester and now an academic associate professor, I think, at University of Leicester, has said, I think he said on a podcast that he did with me, that, you know, it's like you look at people's identity. The majority of Sikhs in the East Midlands live in Leicester. So they are no longer served in the same way that they were by programming which is produced for Derby and Nottingham and Coventry, because local has this crossover between it. You know, there are places where, you know, the majority of the population of Hindus or Muslims in Leicester, as an example, are place-based. It's not so widely dispersed. They're concentrated. Yes, if you aggregate that over the East Midlands, there's a spread and there is some dispersal, but there's a large concentration of people who live within particular areas and stay within those areas in Leicester. So they're disenfranchised because it's assumed that they're just going to have this kind of generic identity which is spread across the region rather than specifically focused with a particular place. So the understanding of how community cohesion and social cohesion actually works and operates is really worrying. This brings me to the next topic that I kind of looked at this week, which is I've not gone through it in detail. It's on my reading list to go into more detail, but the Khan report, which is about social cohesion, and the report really indicates that government hasn't done enough to promote and provide the resources for councils and other authorities to look at community cohesion. The report talks about how social media undermines, you know, the models of access, the free-for-all that we get on social media undermines our social cohesion, and the need for some investment to kind of solidify and to ensure that people aren't subject to some of the kind of, you know, the kind of pushback culture that can come in different forms through it can get very antagonistic in relationships between faith groups or, you know, kind of schooling and education, cancel culture, these kind of things, which kind of have an effect on the ground, if you like, but which aren't being coordinated through government, either national or local government policy. So, you know, the role for community media in that, again, is underexplored. Because we are, you know, one of the defining principles of community radio is the accountability, and accountable to Ofcom, but also the sense of accountability that we have built into the group ourselves. As we produce content, we have to take responsibility for our own broadcast compliance, and we have to put that in a framework where we think about and understand that, you know, it's inclusive, it's follows the Ofcom principles of being, you know, our content follows the Ofcom principles of being impartial, and, you know, a whole load of other factors which we are compelled and rightly so to take into account. So that the danger for the breakup and the fragmentation of cohesive communities is something that we, you know, we in many places and in many ways hasn't been taken seriously. And again, I would have loved people to, you know, somebody from the whichever department is produced the is responsible for the report had been able to talk about it at the symposium, because this is exactly the kind of challenging area where we don't know all of the answers and we don't have all of the evidence, but you know, this is a good prompt for asking us to look at what we do when we run our community radio stations, to think about how we you know, what we do impacts and makes a difference. And that comes down to, you know, what is it, the social gain that we're producing? How do we prove that our radio programs bridge communities rather than just play to narrow subsets within our communities, or vice versa? How do we ensure that our communities are able to represent themselves without having to make reference to the broader community? I had an interesting conversation while I was at the conference, and it kind of, it sums up in this way about a couple of interesting conversations, which can be summed up in this way, is that one of the principles of community radio is self-determination. So a group of people can get together and they have ownership over the means of broadcast. They own the transmitter. They've got an analog FM AM transmitter. They don't have to go to a third party like you do with DAB. You've got to go through a multiplex provider. And you've got ownership over that. And if you do not wish to engage with other groups, as long as you stick within the Ofcom rules, the Ofcom framework, and you're meeting the obligations of your license, then you get yourself determined, you get on with it, and you don't really worry about anybody else. But the other argument was put forward that, you know, kind of we need to be working together and we need to be doing things where we recognise the value of each other. And so there's a tension between the two. And you can't, you know, on the one hand, there's the element of this which is about self-determination, and I've called this, you know, in another blog I wrote this week, was about non-conformity. What if you're a non-conformist and you have particular views about things? You should be able to express them. At the moment, the only place where we really let people go to express non-conformist views is the internet, through YouTube channels, Twitter. These are still controlled by the tech companies, but they're not controlled by communities themselves. They're not part of the civic expression, the civic engagement within communities within the UK. It's kind of parceled out to Elon Musk or to, you know, Google and YouTube and Facebook and those kind of organizations. Well, we've kind of given up our democracy to those people. Having that control over your own mode of communication is an essential part of the democratic process. And yes, there is a need to recognise that we are not islands by ourselves, but we can need to lobby and we need to inform people about the debate, about what we do. So there's a tension there about whether we kind of introduce a sense of uniformity. How do you measure what different types of community radio stations can do? So it's a patchwork quilt. How do you measure one community's activities and compare apples with apples and pears with pears? And you know, that's a difficulty. So they're of equal value, but they do different things and do it in different ways which suit the needs of their communities, rather than it being a standard. And this is where the echo chamber kind of really does kind of, you know, kind of need challenging, I think, is that there's too much imitative thinking about content. And I had a great conversation with Helen, who runs the Evington Echo here in Leicester, about and one of the phrases that she used, which I just thought really hit the nail on the head, is as well as having a diversity of input and diversity of representation, you need diversity of content. And you need to have lots of people doing lots of different things in lots of different ways. And we, you know, just because somebody's fixed with a model that was of what radio was in the 1990s or the 1980s or the way the BBC does things, we've got to abandon that kind of thinking and say, no, there's going to be, let a thousand flowers bloom and each of them is going to be different. We want a meadow of different flowers. that you know, kind of come into bloom at different times and in different ways and attract different insects and have a different purpose. What we don't want is a monoculture, and with the homogenizer, because this is everything I'm against with the you know, the centralization of the commercial operators. It's a homogenization. It's bland. It's boring. There are about, you know, half a dozen people who choose the content that goes out on some commercial radio stations nationally, and there's no variation from that. And I use this model is when you go into the supermarket and you're walking up and down the aisles in the middle, and the Michael Poulin talks about this in relation to food, don't shop the aisles, because it's all standardised products and it's all marketing driven, and it isn't necessarily good for you. It leads to, you know, kind of health problems if all you do is eat frozen pizza and frozen pies and pot noodles and cornflakes. You know, it's you live in a very standardized kind of world, and it's like, that's not the only way to do things. We need some variety. We need some redistribution of creativity, and people need that sense of self-empowerment in order to do that. So this brings me to the third blog that I've written a bit about this week, because it's part of the challenge of supporting Source Sound, which is the new community radio station I'm involved with here in Leicester. And that's about training and about drawing volunteers in to work on different projects. So I've written a blog about what the kind of primary concerns are, that, you know, what we need to do to get training effectively, you know, kind of managed, and in order to think about the kind of roles that people are undertaking. The obvious thing is everybody wants to be a presenter. Well, there's a whole load of other jobs that, you know, really need doing. Volunteer management, accounting, bookkeeping, you know, booking venues, holding training sessions, compliance. There's all these jobs that, you know, take a lot of time and commitment, and usually it's a small number of people in a community radio station who do that. My argument is, and I'm actually, you know, I think I need to be a bit blunter about this, is that, you know, it's not good enough that people just let other people do all the work. You know, I've seen this in other organisations, other community organisations, where there's one or two people who are doing the shouldering the burden of the work, and the other people are kind of passengers, really, and they're enjoying a nice, you know, kind of wonderful life, going, having a very enriching time, but, you know, they're not the ones writing policy documents, they're not the ones holding meetings with local councillors, they're not the ones going to training sessions to find out about safeguarding. You know, it's got to be, people have got to step up and volunteer. That civic society impulse, you know, has to come from us ourselves as citizens. Let's not wait for, you know, public authorities or government to do this for us. You know, it's that self-motivation, self-determination, because what, you know, if we're not prepared to put our shoulder to the wheel, is that the phrase? If we're not prepared to do something about this, why should we wait and expect somebody else to come along and give, you know, provide it for us? You know, we've got to do it, and we can do it badly, but at least we're doing something. Let's get off our backsides on our couches. Let's leave our Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts behind and get into putting these things in place and doing the work that sustains it. It's tiring, it's exhausting, but we've got to build this as an infrastructure and as a platform. And all the great work that, you know, that has taken place needs to be recognised and, you know, rewarded for the benefit, the social benefit that it is. And so, kind of coming back to the symposium, it kind of was a shame that we didn't draw on the experience that was in the room, and that there wasn't a wider variety of people able to attend. It was quite narrow communication about the event, and that it was, you know, it felt to me as if it was the kind of usual suspects, myself included, who turn up at these things, but we hadn't really gone beyond the echo chamber. And that really kind of, it concerns me, because there's some big changes happening to our media with the media bill. There's big changes happening with the platforms, with the commercial sector, with the BBC sector. And these things are all racing apace, and they're all coming, you know, at us with some speed. some momentum, and we kind of need to be engaging with these things, and we need to be having really kind of thorough discussions about them, where we don't resort to magical thinking, and where we don't resort to cliches, and where we don't resort to, you know, kind of you know, unfettered optimism, but where we get to grips with some of these problems. So anyway, that's been me for the last few days, and it's just I'm looking forward to it. I was going to go out and do this as a video outside, but I went out to the shops earlier and it's freezing, so I'll come back in, keep warm, and I'm going to go and watch a movie and have a sleep, I think, now for the rest of the afternoon. So, but at least it's now light until at least 7 o'clock. So take advantage of that short period of time that we've got where the days are extended, and make the most of it, and get out and, you know, kind of listen to some poetry, listen to some music, recharge your batteries, look at the flowers in the park as they come through. And it's been great looking at the daffodils in the last few weeks, so I've enjoyed that. Anyway, if you want to find out more information, visit decentered.co.uk. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, at Decentered Media. Just search for it on those things. We also have a Patreon page, account thing, so you can subscribe and you can support this work that I do. And you can join us on a Wednesday evening. We have a drop-in where we kind of can talk about some of these things. And I always try and get something out there in advance so that you can come and take part and have a good discussion. And it's, there are some really good issues that we need to consider in the broad. And it's useful to have a conversation about them, an off-the-record conversation. So until next time, thank you very much. You've been listening to the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. To find out more, go to decentered.co.uk or follow on Twitter and Instagram at Decentered Media.